You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That escalated quickly. Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. Early Saturday, we wrapped up an episode recapping Friday night's game, a 131-104 home romp by the now 41-13 Rockets over the likely playoff-bound Denver Nuggets. That was encouraging enough in its own right. Clint Capela leading the way with a massive 23-25 showing on the interior. That came just a few hours after late Friday. We learned, A, that the Rockets were front runners for Joe Johnson. Did a show on that Friday evening about the possibilities of him in Houston and why I believe that he's a strong candidate to bounce back for the remainder of the season, or I guess continue his bounce back, if you listen to yesterday's show, when you look at the underlying trends in his numbers. Then, of course, Friday night had a story about the addition of Brandon Wright. That was broken by Shams Charania of Yahoo Sports, and Tim McMahon of ESPN, confirming that Brandon Wright, veteran big man, most recently the Memphis Grizzlies, now bought out, agreeing to a deal with the Rockets as their number three center. So we discussed that on this morning's show in addition to the Denver recap. And then later Saturday morning, got the news from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN that it's official. The Rockets are no longer front runners for Joe Johnson. They have now completed a deal. It is agreed to. Joe will be bought out later today by the Kings. He was traded there from the Jazz in the wave of activity on Thursday that sent Rodney Hood to Cleveland. George Hill there as well, just a massive three-way deal. Jay Crowder to Utah. Essentially, Joe Johnson was a salary cap casualty to make the math work to where the Jazz could absorb the $7 million plus contract of Jay Crowder. Joe Johnson, of course, a seven-time All-Star, 36 years old. You guys know him as ISO Joe, but also a very well-rounded player, good shooter, over 37% for his career, very high IQ player, has experience with Mike D'Antoni over the years back in Phoenix, played 4 years in the mid-2000s, where he flourished in that D'Antoni system. So a lot of fits tying into Houston. We learned this morning from Woj that the deal is, in fact, complete, just a matter of Joe receiving his buyout from Sacramento. Joe, again, 36 years old, seven-time All-Star, does not fit on a dreadful Kings team, especially on an expiring deal. That's a no-brainer. That will be finalized later today. Then there's a 48-hour waiver process, which he will certainly clear. No one's going to claim him on an expiring $10 million deal. Barely any teams have that much cap room to begin with. And once that happens, which I believe will be 4 p.m. Houston time on Monday afternoon, he will be free to sign anywhere. And according to Wojnarowski, he will be signing in Houston. So lots to look forward to in the next few days. If he signs Monday, he will be eligible to play on Tuesday and Wednesday with the back-to-back in Minnesota and then home against Sacramento. Typically, Mike likes his new players to at least participate in one practice before playing. Joe, with his veteran experience, might be an exception because, well, he's played 17 seasons, I believe, including four with Mike D'Antoni, incredibly high IQ. This might be an exception to the rule, especially in a back-to-back scenario where you're probably going to have a lot of tired legs, maybe still resting Trevor Ariza with his hamstring injury. We'll have to wait and see. But the deal agreed to as of today and should be official Monday afternoon after the waiver period expires. Joe Johnson, seven-time All-Star, joining the Rockets. And what a period it's been for the Rockets, who now, going into the playoffs, if they are healthy, they have their original nine-man rotation that's been there all along, the starters and then the initial bench players, Luke Bamute, P.J. Tucker, Nene, and Eric Gordon. Now, maybe they start P.J. Tucker or Luke instead of Ryan Anderson at the four, which they did Friday. We'll have to wait and see how they play it. But now you have your initial nine supplemented by Joe Johnson, Gerald Green, and Brandon Wright. Just an incredibly deep 12-man roster with three proven NBA players found by Daryl Morey over the past month and a half, all without even giving up a single player via trade. Just a staggering amount of moves made by Daryl Morey, all without even giving up any assets to get it done. Just shows you how elite of a GM he is. And if you listen to yesterday's show, you know why I am really buying in upon a closer inspection of the numbers as to the fit of Joe Johnson here in Houston, both from a rotation aspect and where he is as a basketball player, which in my opinion is a lot higher level than what you may initially think when you see him 36 years old, averaging just 7.3 points per game on 27% shooting from behind the arc. There's some extenuating circumstances, most notably that he's been over 36% for his last 21 games. He's only at the low levels because he had a ghastly 7.7% start to the year from behind the arc, and that's because he was playing with a bad injury to his shooting wrist, which caused him to miss 6 weeks. Very legitimate, and since then, since he's been healthy, he's been the same old Joe, reliable shooter, can certainly create his own shot. Also, diversity of skill sets, he can give you some of that mid-range game, back to the basket, kind of similar to Chris Paul, not that Chris Paul's a back-to-the-basket player, but the same dynamic that both Joe and Chris give you a more flexible, diverse offense than simply the three-point shooting and layup tendencies that we saw a year ago with the Rockets and ultimately got snuffed out a bit by the Spurs in that second-round series. But folks, you've heard yesterday's show what I think about Joe Johnson. Certainly there are people that have an even better view of what he is still capable of bringing to the Rockets at 36 years old, and I'm going to have one of them for you in today's show. I'm going to be joined in just a few moments by David Locke. You know him, well, as Locked On Sports on Twitter. He's the godfather of this Locked On Podcast Network with so many great shows across the NBA and NFL. But more than that, his day job, and I use quotes when I say that because David is incredibly busy, but he is the radio play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz. He has covered Joe very closely over the past three seasons that he has been in Utah, including last year when the Jazz went on their deepest playoff run in some time, including a first round in which Joe Johnson had a game winner at the buzzer out of an ISO situation, of all things, and, of course, averaged 16-4-3 in 32 minutes per game in that 4-3 series win by the Jazz over the LA Clippers. So David has followed Joe very closely over his time in Utah, including this year and his bounce back over the past 6 weeks, so I can think of no one better suited to offer insight on exactly where Joe is at this stage of his career as he joined the Rockets in February than the lead broadcaster of the team he was just on a few days ago. So if you stick with me for just a couple of moments, we're going to get David Locke connected, and he'll have even more insight on this Joe Johnson to the Rockets move right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. All right, joining us now is David Locke, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. He's had a front row seat for the last 2 years to Joe Johnson, who has played with the Jazz since 2016 until the trade earlier this week that sent Rodney Hood to Cleveland and Jay Crowder to the Utah Jazz, essentially as a replacement for Rodney Hood and Joe Johnson. David, welcome back, buddy.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Great work on your show, as always.
Appreciate it. First things first, your initial reaction when you heard, I guess starting Thursday, that the Rockets were interested in Joe up until this morning when the deal was finalized. Was this a fit that made sense for you, both from the Rockets' perspective and from Joe's?
Maybe the best fit. There's a little question to me of who Joe is at this point. I mean, there's only 20 guys who've ever played more minutes than he has in his NBA career, so he's definitely, you know, pushing the limits of what a body can do in the NBA. I know he wanted to go play for a contender. I think it kind of was agreed upon with the Jazz, and had they not been able to trade him, they would have bought him out. So it made sense. The Warriors was a spot that was being talked about, and I think he probably would have helped more than Nick Young and Omri Caspi. I'm not sure whose minutes he's getting on your roster, so I'd have to understand that a little bit better. So maybe in some ways I thought he was a more needed fit for the Warriors than I did for Houston. But there's also just a question of what you're getting as a player.
Yeah, and I'll start with that. We'll go in before we wrap up and discuss whose minutes he might get. But as far as Joe as a player, when I first heard of the possibility earlier this week, I was a little down on it because at first glance you see a guy who is at 36 years old, 17 years of NBA mileage on his body with a shooting percentage of just 27% from behind the arc. But then when you actually break down the splits a little more, it was the first 11 games when he shot just 7.7% from behind the arc. And that was when, of course, he had the injury to his shooting wrist. The 7 games before that, missed 6 games on the or 6 weeks on the shelf, excuse me. And then the first 4 games after coming back in December, there was a little bit of rust, which is understandable. Over his last 21, he's shooting about 45% from the field and 36% from three, which not great, but in terms of Joe as a shooter, it's been fairly in line with his career averages. So to me, I have not gotten to see that many Utah games except for the two times I've been to Houston, and I've done stats for you. It's not like the Jazz are on national TV that much this year. But at least looking at his statistics, it looks like you can mount a case for optimism over the last 20 games. Certainly not that it's all-star version Joe Johnson, but at least he seems to have rediscovered the shooting touch and has put the wrist injury behind him. Is that a reasonable assessment?
Yeah, I think that is. I think you've done a nice job there. I also think that if he actually went through the season, the early start hurt 10-plus-year veterans. Guys who had been veterans and kind of had their rhythm and knew how they got their body started weren't ready. David West didn't start well. I don't know what P.J. Tucker did to start well, but I think he's an 11- or 12-year veteran at this point, or at least he's old. Maybe there's not that many years because of his time in Europe. But I thought a lot of those guys really struggled early in the year just because they had a biorhythmic system by which they got ready for the season, and then it got changed. The Joe has gotten better month by month. The biggest thing for Joe is if you look at the last 2 years, look at his numbers with no rest, one day of rest, or two or more days rest. When he has two or more days rest, he's a pretty good offensive player. When he has no rest or one day's rest, he's not nearly as good. The Jazz had actually started to kind of rest him a little bit. They did it in San Antonio, I think it was, because then he got an extra day off before he played New Orleans. And so we had started to do some things of that nature because he's just a better player with multiple days rest.
Yeah, and to your point on P.J. Tucker, he came into training camp with a hamstring injury, and he did get off to a slow start in the year, so that's a very interesting point as far as guys with more mileage on their bodies starting the season in mid-October and training camp in late September, about 2 or 3 weeks early compared to traditional norms. That's a very interesting point. I guess if Joe's performance is so strongly correlated to his days of rest, maybe that's where it makes sense on a Rockets team that's, at this point, along with the addition of Brandon Wright, you have the original nine-man rotation plus Joe, plus Gerald Green, plus Brandon Wright. Those are the three additions that Daryl Morey has made during the year. So does it almost seem like he's well-suited for, I don't know if it's a small minutes-per-game role, but essentially letting him be a specialist on these days where there's extra rest? And I guess a second part of that question for you, we all know he was a difference-maker in the playoff series for the Jazz a year ago, hit the buzzer beater. In the playoffs, when there are no back-to-back games, you do have days off and sometimes multiple days off in between games. Is that maybe a part of the narrative for Joe that makes it seem like that maybe he's a guy who can step up his game to a higher level in the playoffs when you have more off days?
I think those are all accurate. I mean, the big question is still maybe a little bit, who does Joe Johnson think he is, right? He's still Joe Johnson. And Joe Johnson's one of the great players this league has had, in top scorers and all that. So I don't know whether Joe's willing to just play 10 minutes a night or every third night or things of that nature. I'm not sure that's what he's willing to do in Utah. So I don't know if how his mindset is toward going to Houston and doing it. There's a few myths on him. He's not ISO. He can be ISO Joe, there's no question, but he's a pretty good ball mover. I think he'll be surprised with his passing and his willingness to pass. And then when he has a matchup he likes, he'll just work him down in the middle of the paint and hit that little hook shot it's in the paint non-restricted, so Daryl's going to have momentary, quivers go through his body when that happens. But it's a pretty good percentage shot. It's a good playoff shot. And he is able to go kind of get that. And when he starts to work someone down and knows what he's doing, he's going to score. And if someone doubles, he's going to pass. So he's not, there's that ISO Joe thing about him, but he's not a selfish player at all. He was a super teammate and a good guy in the locker room.
Yeah, that's good to know. And I've heard a lot of good stories about Joe as the locker room presence. And as far as his, you mentioned back to the basket game, low post. I think it's one of those things. It certainly doesn't go with Daryl's historical MO, but I think they've certainly benefited in certain matchups this year from Chris Paul's ability to use that middle part of the floor. And so I think potentially what they're thinking here is that this is another place where they can get some synergies from that dynamic as well. David, in terms of the minutes, I'm just curious. There's been a lot of potential roles thrown out there. The Rockets don't really have a third point guard after Chris Paul and James Harden. Some folks are curious about him as a ball handler. To me, at this stage in Joe's career, you mentioned his postgame, he makes more sense as a small ball four. And if you look at the Rockets, excluding injuries, what few issues they've had this year have come because either Ryan Anderson or PJ Tucker, sometimes both, have just not given them enough at the four spot. The shooting has been inconsistent for both of those guys, and you know what Ryan Anderson's defensive deficiencies are. So at first glance, looking at the roster, what it feels like Johnson, to me, offers them more than anything else, he kind of mitigates the inconsistencies, perhaps, of Ryan and PJ. So just from a stylistic perspective, is the small ball four most realistic for him at, as we said, age 36, year 17 in the NBA? And if not, what's the ideal role for him at this point?
I think that's his only role at this point.
Okay.
That's the only way we've played him all year and since All-Star break last year. And the only place we've seen him have success until he had success in Miami. He's not a very good rebounder out of that position, so you better have somebody who's really with him. But that's his role. He has had stretches this year where he'd make Ryan Anderson look like a good defensive player. That's worth noting.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, I think you hope that, you know, Clint Capella had his 23 and 25 game last night, that hopefully if Capella's evolution is legitimate and sustained into the playoff, that you have him to sort of cover for those liabilities. But yeah, the small ball four seems to be a much more realistic than as a true ball handler. He's not a ball handler.
That's my assessment.
I
don't know where anybody saw that. They haven't seen him play in 8 years.
Right. That's my take, is that a lot of the folks saying that, you know, he could be, you know, a ball handling relief outlet are people who are thinking of the Joe Johnson when he played for Mike D'Antoni 12 years ago, as opposed to the Joe Johnson today. The Joe Johnson today is pretty much exclusively a small ball four in today's NBA, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So let's talk about the locker room aspect. You mentioned that earlier. I guess the one thing, as you said, the question is, what role is he willing to accept? I would think the fact that he signed in Houston in the first place, despite having other options, would speak well to him having an open mind about his role, because certainly Houston's a very deep team already. Aside from expectations of role, discuss who he is in the locker room. I've heard a lot of stories about him being an incredibly high IQ guy. I'm imagining he'll fit in pretty well.
Yeah, he's very quiet. I mean, he's not one who's going to talk a lot. He kind of goes about, does his business. He's always there. You know, he'll stroll into the locker room and he'll get his work done early when he wants to. And he's a big yoga guy. He does Bikram yoga every morning. He had our coaching staff getting up with him at 4:45, 5:30 in the morning to go do Bikram yoga on game days before shoot around. That's a part of it. He's very routine oriented. He's very big into maintaining his body. And so that's part of it is that yoga that he'll do every single morning. And he's been doing it, you know, religiously. The best comment I can make about him is a locker room guy, though very, very quiet. I mean, not going to be, you know, he's not going to talk over someone, or if Chris Paul's on a tirade, he's not going to probably stop it. Is that the night he got traded, he and a bunch of guys went out for dinner.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, he got traded and he and the Jazz guys went out for dinner that night. I think that's a pretty interesting insight on what they think of Joe.
Yep. Let me ask the earlier question in a different way. If he had picked the Warriors or another playoff team, I know there are questions in Houston about the fit here just because of the depth and what exactly his role is going to be. If he had chosen the Warriors or another team, is this a guy that could have been a difference maker? I mean, it seems like almost, I guess where I'm going with that question is that as much as the Rockets could gain from having Joe potentially to fill some of those inconsistencies we mentioned with Ryan Anderson and PJ Tucker, maybe you also benefit from also keeping him off and away from Golden State and Oklahoma City, two other teams in the West who had reportedly expressed interest in Joe and also have, I would say, somewhat perimeter player deficiencies. So maybe you also gain from keeping him off those other rosters. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's going to be interesting. Let's be honest a little bit about some things here, though, for a second. So he's by far the worst Jazz plus-minus player this year.
Okay.
Defensive rating with him on the floor was awful. I mean, he really struggled for a lot of the year. He's gotten a little bit better recently. With all of that said, you know, if he's in the ballgame late in the game where you need a bucket, I feel pretty comfortable if the ball swings to him.
Yeah.
You know, that he's special in that regard. And but he plays his own manner and his own speed, and so maybe he wouldn't have matched as well at the Warriors with some of their issues, and we'll see what he does with Houston. But, I mean, if it's 92-92 and you're going to throw him out on the floor, I'm pretty comfortable with him being on the floor, and I'm really comfortable if he ends up with the ball.
Yeah, It sounds like what you're saying almost is low floor, high ceiling, and maybe that's what you need to compete with a team like the Warriors, who might be the most talented team the league has ever seen. When I mentioned the low floor, it ties into, as you were saying, the lower defensive ratings, the poor structures he's had on that side. But then the upside being that, you know, if you're getting a guy like that as a buyout candidate, that even against a really good team can still go down and get you a couple of really tough buckets late in a tight game. It just sounds like to me you're saying somewhat, you know, there's a low floor but a high ceiling, and that he's got more upside than a typical buyout player might. And then because of that, you know, maybe that's what Daryl Morey is thinking by targeting him, is that, you know, even with the deficiencies, there's just that upside that's not there with a lot of other players, that late in a close game against a team even like Golden State or Oklahoma City, you can trust him to go out and get a bucket.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's also a chance that there's a reason only 20 guys have played as many minutes as he has in his career.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, that's really an incredible accomplishment. And that comes to an end at some point in time. And we're not great. So there wasn't as much pressure to figure, you know, I don't know what happens if someone's shooting at him, trying to expose him on the defensive end every possession. There's a chance that that doesn't work also. So
true.
It goes, you know, it can go either way. I think that's really what a buyout player is, you know, we're still trying to make the playoffs. If we traded him, obviously, but I think we would have bought him out anyway, just to let him go have this opportunity because he is Joe Johnson. I mean, he's just a cool cat. He's a cool cat. He's got an aura about him. Late in the game, you're comfortable with him, but he is also just the only guys that have played more, that are active, that have played more minutes than him is Dirk Nowitzki. And the only guy in the league, only guys in the league that have played as many minutes as him are Vince Carter and Jason Terry and Dirk Nowitzki. And, you know, those guys aren't doing much right now. So it's pretty, you know, he's exceeded what anyone would reasonably expect, but you also probably got to be a little honest about who he is and where he is in his career right now. And when you look at the other players who've played the kind of minutes he's played, LeBron is in that group also, but he's, you know, there's never been anything like him. So, you know, Jason Terry's not very good right now. Vince Carter's not very good right now. Dirk's only okay. Like, well, I think you got to be aware of that when you're talking about Joe Johnson.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just talking about the potential. And maybe there's just as much benefits, just as you were saying earlier, from having him in the locker room and having that presence around a Rockets team that has not been that deep in the playoffs that many times before, in terms of just one Western Conference Finals appearance in the last 20 years, and a lot of these guys not being a part of that run. David, bigger picture before we wrap this up. Obviously, Joe Johnson, not the only addition. They also added Brandon Wright, also Gerald Green a little over a month ago. And right now they're 41-13. They've won 7 in a row, 11-12. Some of the prediction models, the 538s of the world, have actually, you know, nudged them ahead of Golden State. Right now they have the same record as Golden State, or same loss column. The Rockets do hold a tiebreaker, but I'm not oblivious. The statistical models have the Rockets maybe even or slightly ahead of Golden State because they're models. They don't understand the human factor, which is that the Warriors been there, done that. When the Warriors want to play hard in the playoffs, they are a completely different animal than just one game out of 82, even though the Rockets beat them 2 or 3 times. So where I'm going with this long-winded question is, based on what you've seen from the Rockets this year, I'm certainly not asking you if they're the favorite, because I would agree, they're not. Do you at least feel better about them than maybe 2 or 3 months ago, about at least having a shot to take 4 out of 7 in a playoff series?
Kind of feel exactly as I did when the year started. I loved them when the year started.
Okay.
I had their offense right up there with the Warriors. And then the question was what they did defensively, and they've been better defensively in the regular season than I think anyone expected. And I felt the whole time that with the amount of threes that they take and the way they play, if they have 2 good shooting nights in a span of 7, then the series gets real. And so I think there's absolutely a reason to believe that they could give the Warriors a run for their money and challenge them. The Warriors are pretty good 3-point shooting defense when they click in, but they don't seem quite right. Iguodala is the one I'm watching most closely there. He doesn't seem right, and if he's not right, they're not completely there.
Yeah, I know you got a front row seat a couple of weeks ago when they lost by 30 to you guys in Utah, right?
Yeah, we worked them, but that's a. that should be a sign that we shouldn't take anything they're doing particularly seriously right now. Because
yeah.
We're not 30 points better than them, and they had definitely checked out on that
Right, understood. One final question I'll sneak in. I remember before one of the Rockets-Jazz games that we did stats for earlier this year, you know, you were skeptical about Tarik Black. There's a game right before that he played well, and you know, you didn't think much of him. It's pretty obvious that the Brandon Wright signing is meant to upgrade that number three spot, essentially. I would say split minutes between Wright and Nene, depending on the matchup, I would think, as far as who is your backup center. Is Wright over Tarik Black an upgrade in your eyes? Just curious what you thought about that.
3 years ago, it would be tremendous. 3 years ago, Brandon Wright was probably the most underrated player in the league. Analytically, was through the roof. Loved him. Huge fan. Thought he was going to do big things. Had all the knee problems. So I don't know who he is as a player right now. So I can't answer that question. If he's 3 years ago, it's an incredible signing.
Gotcha. So it's one of those things. And of course, he's just 30. You just hope that if he's healthy, he's missed time with a groin injury. He says he's healthy. It's just one of those. You hope you're getting the version of him that was there 3 years ago, and also maybe putting him in a contending environment helps there as well. I guess it's just a roll of the dice, and that roll of the dice probably has more value than Tarik Black. Fair assessment.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, Brandon Wright really was high on my list a few years ago. So if he's right, it's super.
Yep.
But I'm not sure it really matters. I mean, I don't think that anyone other than Capella and Nene are going to play those minutes when the playoffs start. So it might just be a nice way to see if you can get something out of Wright when Nene rests and keep Nene ready for the playoffs. But I don't think you're going with somebody other than Nene in the playoffs.
Probably not. I would say there's certain matchups where in the past that Nene against the Warriors has been a problem, but that last Rockets-Warriors game, Nene was actually pretty playable. I think some folks are jittery about Nene because, you know, he's had an injury history, left the playoffs early last year with the Achilles issue that he had, or not the Achilles, the groin, what am I talking about? The groin issue he had in Game 4 against the Spurs. But I think you're probably right. Nene, if he's right, if he's healthy, even that last match against the Warriors, he showed something. He's probably your guy, and Wright's just your better-than-black insurance and a lottery ticket, most likely, over the final 2 months of this year. David, thank you so much for the time. Toss out your outlets because, you know, by day, of course, you are the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, but certainly Locked On Jazz, Locked On NBA, at Locked On Sports on Twitter, whatever you want to plug for our listeners here in Houston.
All those things, keep listening to Locked On Rockets. We've got Locked On Texans as well for you or Locked On Cowboys, if you're a Cowboys fan. So the network is growing, and appreciate all the work Ben's doing and giving Rockets fans a great show every day.
Excellent. Thank you, David. I'll be talking again soon, okay?
See you, bud.
That's David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz on radio broadcast. Thought it's a pretty good level-headed discussion on what Joe Johnson's strengths and weaknesses are. Defensively, that's where there's limitations. You would expect that for a guy who's 36 years old. Also, as he said, I think those of you asking him to be a relief valve in the backcourt are thinking of a much younger Joe Johnson. At this point, his value is as a small ball four, and that fits into exactly what we've been saying over the past couple of days with him as an option in Houston, which is that his best potential value is that he mitigates the inconsistencies of guys like Ryan Anderson and PJ Tucker. Thought also the insight that David had about his production on multiple days off is very intriguing because, of course, the playoffs, there are no back-to-backs. Many times you have 2 days off in between games, and maybe that's why playoff Joe Johnson has consistently been better than regular Joe Johnson. As far as day in, day out, with the defensive limitations, folks, it comes down to many times what they're surrounded by. I think the hope is that in Houston, the presence of Clint Capella inside, all sorts of perimeter defenders, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, Chris Paul often sharing the floor with him, and hopefully with that you can mitigate that. And then, of course, the proverbial extra pep in the step that often comes when a player like Joe Johnson gets into a winning situation. And, you know, the comps he threw out there, Dirk, Jason Terry, Vince Carter, those are probably reasonable as far as the mileage, but the reality is that we've seen it from Dirk even the last time the Rockets played the Mavs in the playoffs. Those guys oftentimes in big games have a way of still stepping up. Jason Terry, think back 2 years ago when Pat Beverly was out, or 3 years ago now, when the Rockets went on that run to the Western Conference Finals. Jason Terry was your starting point guard, and he found a way to make a lot of big shots in the playoffs on that run. So I think that's what you're hoping for from Joe as, you know, we eventually kind of came to the conclusion he's just a high upside lottery ticket. He may be a lower floor than some guys because the defense it can be an issue on some nights and in certain matchups, but at the same time, based on the diversity of his offensive game, he's the kind of guy that can go out and get you a tough bucket, even in a one-on-one situation in a tight matchup. And even amongst the Rockets rotation players right now, that's not something you can say about all of them. So it makes sense why the Rockets went after them. It's important to go in there with understandings. There's a reason that he was getting bought out. There's a reason it's not a guarantee that he's going to occupy major minutes on this team. So, you know, you go both ways and you just hope that ultimately the deficiencies get mitigated a bit by the boost of being in a winning, contending culture in Houston and being around this team that obviously he's comfortable with, Chris Paul, James Harden, Mike D'Antoni. I'm sure they've already had conversations behind the scenes, and Mike knows Joe well from their days in Phoenix. I thought the point that David made, while always a fair one, is the player, especially when they're a veteran, willing to accept an inconsistent role, one in which he doesn't know his minutes. Well, the fact that guys that other teams like Golden State, like Boston, like Oklahoma City were after Joe, some with a clearer path to minutes than the Rockets, but the fact that he chose Houston, to me, that's a pretty clear sign that it's not just going to be about raw minutes, and if he doesn't get the raw minutes, that there's going to be trouble. He seems pretty comfortable with the fit in Houston, and that's a big step. There are still certain deficiencies. He's 36, 17 years in the league. There's a lot of mileage, but at least on paper, when you look at the reasons that led to this choice, you can see a case to where this works out, to where at least he's a definite bump up in terms of the 10th, 11th, 12th guy on your rotation relative to what that's been for the Rockets for most of this season and really most of this past season as well under Mike D'Antoni. Under the radar benefit to this, even if none of these guys, Joe Johnson, Brandon Wright, are playing enormous roles in the playoffs, I like what one of my Twitter followers pointed out earlier today, which is that if Mike D'Antoni trusts the 10th, 11th, and 12th options more, then maybe he's less likely to play guys like Chris Paul, James Harden, extended minutes in blowouts. Many times it happens because he doesn't trust, you know, he thinks that those guys, you know, the G League type players at the end of the bench, when they come in, that the game's going to quickly become competitive again. Maybe now, a side benefit, if you have guys at the end of the bench like Joe, like Brandon, or whoever they might displace, then it makes it all the easier to hold Chris Paul to 22 minutes like you did last night, to hold James Harden to 27 minutes, and ultimately, in addition to whatever they can provide individually, maybe the collective presence of a roster that's truly 1 through 12 deep gives you a much fresher core, the actual guys that will probably decide your season, guys like James Harden, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, etc., once you get to the postseason and this run that we hope goes on for sometime in April, May, and June. On that note, I will wrap things right there. As always, thanks to you guys for tuning in, and special thanks to all of you that made it through all three episodes. If you haven't and want more content, this might be the busiest 24-hour period we've ever had in the history of Locked On Rockets, and what's funny is that right before the 24-hour period that we've had here, I said that we probably wouldn't have an episode yesterday. I was feeling a little under the weather. Well, folks, sometimes breaking news supersedes you feeling a little bit under the weather, and that's what's happened here between the signings of Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright, the big win over a likely playoff-bound Denver Nuggets squad last night. A lot to talk about, so if you've made it through all of it, thank you so much for loyally tuning in. If you haven't made it through but you want to listen to any of the others, we've got a lot of archives wherever you listen to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you get your Locked On Rockets content, also LockedOnRockets.com. You can find our archives Saturday morning. That's our Denver recap show, broke down last night's game, the Brandon Wright signing, and what the LeBron James situation looks like now that the trade deadline has passed and Cleveland made all those trades, including one of Cleveland's trades involving Joe Johnson, which had the trickle-down effect of Joe getting bought out by the Kings and then coming by the Rockets. That was all part of our Saturday morning show. Then Friday's show was about the Joe Johnson possibility when I did a deeper look into his numbers, and that's when I started to become more bullish on the possibility based on, again, the splits, what you saw from him the first 11 games and then what you've seen the past 21, where at least offensively he has steadied the ship and with the wrist injury behind him seems to be the quality shooter, the quality shot creator that he's been for most of his 17-year career, again, a seven-time All-Star in the NBA. So, folks, the end of this, I hope we can take at least 24 hours off. Hopefully this will be the last show for a little bit, but with Daryl Morey, you never know. Always have to stay tuned. And if there is news, of course, we'll break it here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily news and analysis on the Houston Rockets. But I think now the Rockets roster set 1 through 12, still waiting to see exactly who gets released for that final spot. My hunch is that it'll be Tarik Black, still not official yet, but the Rockets have a couple of days for that. They don't need to actually release anyone until Monday or Tuesday when Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright both pass through waivers and are officially eligible to sign. Before then, they can't sign, so technically you don't have to release anyone. But other than that, piece of news could break in the next 24 hours. The Rockets just want to give a courtesy heads up. We'll see how they want to handle it. But other than that, I think we can at least enjoy our Saturday evenings and then meet right back here on Sunday night when the Rockets play the Mavs over at Toyota Center. And then, of course, after the game, we'll have full post-game coverage here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily post-game and, well, all sorts of analysis on Houston Rockets basketball. Because, amazingly, as great as the Rockets playing 41-13 on the year, there's been a lot more than just post-game coverage of late. There's also been a lot of transaction news over the past 5 weeks. Rockets bringing in Gerald Green, Joe Johnson, and Brandon Wright. So whatever happens with the Rockets, not just games, but news, roster transactions, anything else involving your Houston Rockets, we'll be here for you at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. And folks, until tomorrow, enjoy the rest of your Saturday evening. Final plugs again, facebook.com/lockdownrockets, lockdownrockets.com is the website, and lockdownrockets@gmail.com. That's how you can ask me questions, make suggestions, or inquire about potentially becoming a sponsor of this rapidly growing program, thanks to awesome listeners like all of you. So folks, until that Mavs game tomorrow night, enjoy the rest of your Saturday, and thanks again for listening to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.